These two studies are part of a four-paper series. Two studies were conducted with former state legislators in a qualitative fashion, and then two studies were yielded as a result of cross-sectional quantitative data analysis of constituent responses to the different tobacco control measures. So for this talk, I'm going to be talking about tobacco taxes in the southeastern U.S. states, the views from former state legislators. Again, no relationships to disclose, and this was funded by the CDC PRC SIP, entitled Innovative Messaging on Tobacco Control Policies Targeting Diverse Populations. And this is currently already published in Health Behavior and Policy Review, and again, acknowledgement of our stakeholder advisory board, including people from our Georgia Department of Community Health, American Cancer Society, American Lung, American Heart, and the Regional Cancer Coalitions of Georgia, among others. So again, increasing tobacco prices reduces the total tobacco consumed, prevalence of tobacco use, initiation of tobacco use among young people, tobacco-related health disparities among income and racial and ethnic groups, tobacco-related morbidity and mortality, and healthcare and other health-related costs also increases cessation and attempts. The most common policy approach is federal, state, or local tax legislation. Unfortunately, this rarely applies to alternative tobacco products, and the national average state cigarette tax is $1.53 per pack. This level is far lower in southeastern states. Southeastern states are among those with the least progressive tobacco control policies kind of across the board. And again, this is a depiction of what I've already mentioned, where across the U.S. we have, you know, a long ways to come in terms of tobacco prevention and control and cessation. The southeastern states being particularly poor in smoke-free policy implementation as well as tax legislation around tobacco. So one of the biggest questions that we continue to have is why are the southeastern states laggards? And we have some kind of intuitions about why this might be, but this study was basically asking the state legislators themselves why we're in the spot that we are. Well, here's some ideas. Well, southeastern states are among those with the highest smoking prevalence, as high as 28% in Kentucky versus a national average of 19%. These states produce the largest amount of tobacco in the U.S., and they're home of the six of the top 10 tobacco-growing states. And if, as I've already mentioned, tobacco-growing state lawmakers are less likely to vote for tobacco control legislation, despite the decreasing role of tobacco in the state's economies. Legislator personal values or attitudes might be determinants of voting decisions. And as I've kind of highlighted, there was a counter study that we've also published indicating that southeastern state residents are more likely to believe that their state was in the bottom 20 states in tobacco taxation. They were less likely to report that their tobacco taxes were too high. So this might reflect a readiness for increased tobacco taxes in this region. So the general aim of this study was to qualitatively examine the attitudes and behaviors of 26 former state legislators in the southeastern U.S. region. Our primary aims were to identify influences of state legislators' actions related to cigarette excise taxes and to examine state legislators' impressions of emerging tobacco tax issues related to newer non-cigarette tobacco products. So we recruited former state legislators via email, phone, letters, et cetera, to complete a phone-based semi-structured interview. And this was quite a process, as you might imagine, especially in terms of the limitations regarding generalizing our study sample to those that we couldn't find or those that were not responsive to us. We interviewed a total of 26 former state legislators that represented Virginia, Louisiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, Mississippi, South Carolina, West Virginia, and Arkansas. The interview focused on their history of work, their general attitudes towards tobacco control, their attitudes towards increased taxes on cigarettes and alternative tobacco, and then, as I've mentioned, we also did another component of this related to smoke-free policies. So in terms of the composition of our study sample, about 60 years old on average, about 85% were black, were males, and about 96% were Caucasian, about 85% married, 50% with more than a bachelor's degree, with about 7 years of service on average, and about 10 of them, so 40%, were conservative, and 62% were Democratic. So first we wanted to identify some of the sociocultural factors that impacted cigarette taxation legislation in this region. As you might imagine, the legacy of tobacco came up in multiple interviews. For example, one Democratic representative said, we had done some taxing on cigarettes, but we're still really, really low in taxing tobacco products. And that goes back to some of the problems of passing the tobacco bill. Tobacco has a strong history in our state, and a lot of our towns were built on tobacco money. So it's a hard sell to get people to vote against tobacco legislation, including taxing tobacco. Another thing that came up was regional relativity. People in the Southeast, or the legislators in the Southeast, did not want to be compared to California or to New York. One Republican said, of course, we're among the very lowest at fourth in the country in tax levels. So there's certainly room for us to go up in the tobacco tax. I think we should go up at least to where we're towards the top in the Southeast. And if we can't, of course, I'm in favor of going even higher. But a lot of the conversation that was had across the different topics was really how they were sitting within regard to their neighbors and not how they were sitting on a national level. The importance of state government came up a lot. One Republican said, just because some of the states want to tax their cigarettes by $10 doesn't mean that we have to. That's what states' rights are all about, right? I mean, if not, let's just create one state and do away with all these state lines. Let's just have one state. In terms of attitudes and experiences regarding cigarette excise tax legislation, here is some kind of general themes that came up in terms of support. One was regarding kind of deterring smoking and protecting health. One Democrat said, I see cigarette tax as a way of deterring people from smoking, period. I don't smoke and never have. If they raised it to $2 a pack, I wouldn't care. But I see it as I favor anything that would deter a person from starting to smoke or help a person to quit. Raising the taxes, it might affect my election or would affect my election. It wouldn't matter to me. I'd raise it anyway. In terms of offsetting healthcare costs, it was another reason for support. One Democrat said, if we're going to have tobacco as a legal product, and we know that it's a health risk that carries a lot of expense to the state into the cities and counties in the form of healthcare, then, you know, I certainly don't mind taxing the product to get the money to be able to pay for that. In terms of opposition, a lot of different themes came up. Interestingly, one was protecting consumers. I'm against increasing cigarette taxes. It's just too costly for the consumers, said one Republican. Another Republican said, I'm conservative, borderline conservative libertarian, and I just believe less taxes stimulate the economy. The more you tax people, it takes more income away from them. And then one Republican also is representing kind of a group of people that said that they were against all taxes. He said, I would just say my view on tobacco taxes is the same as it is on other types of taxation. That, you know, the government, in my view, already takes a tremendous amount of money from the people, and government should learn to live within its means and should not be constantly adding on new revenues on the backs of the taxpayers. Another kind of theme that came up was being against sin taxes. And one Republican said, when government needs more revenue, tobacco and alcohol are often singled out for taxation. Some legislators see these as easy pickings, so to speak, because people would take a negative view of smoking or what have you, and it would be easy to get those taxes raised. At the same time, they're trying to raise revenues. They're also trying to influence people's behaviors and choices. I don't see that as the business of government, to be manipulating people's liberties in terms of whether they smoke. And that comes up again that I'll mention. There's also the belief that taxes should only be intended to generate revenue. One Republican said the only reason that a government entity should tax, whether it's local, state, or federal, is if you think the government needs more money to operate. I didn't think that we needed a tax at that particular time on any good or service in addition to what was already there. One thing that has come up both in the literature and then came up in our interviews was concern about the neighboring state's tax rates, so people going across state borders. One Democrat said, the district I represent, because I border a state, we have to be careful about how we do things to keep people from going over the neighboring to the neighboring side to buy cigarettes or vice versa. Again, one thing that came up repeatedly was the function of cigarette tax. And a theme was the disbelief that the taxes should influence smoking behavior. And one Republican said, you know, it's been going on so long that people said, you know, I'll never buy a pack if it goes over $2. And then, you know, I'll never buy if it goes over 3. I'll never buy if it goes over 5. And, you know, they're still buying cigarettes today, whatever cost. Another theme that came up was feeling that cigarette taxes do not generate revenue. One Republican said, for the most part, the folks who advocated increasing tobacco taxes were people who had an unrealistic idea about how it would solve the economic problems as far as state revenue. Sorry, there's a typo here. Also, impact on reelection. As a Republican, even the groups that I worked with at the time, I mean, I can't go on raising taxes on cigarettes. I just don't think, you know, taxing right now is a good public policy. And it's been in the past. It's just, if you're going to do that, you're not going to get reelected. And that was something that came up in a lot of the interviews, was taxing in general. And the way that your competitors within a campaign can use any increase in any tax, tobacco or otherwise, against you. And people didn't want to be known for raising taxes, even if it was a tobacco tax, because the tobacco would be dropped in the media and you would just be known as the candidate who raised taxes. We asked also about stakeholders that impacted cigarette excise tax legislation. Some of the stakeholders in opposition, perceptions that stakeholders oppose all taxes, or that your constituents oppose all taxes. One Republican said, "I think that the general attitude basically is taxes are bad. And people that feel that way still like roads, power lines, and stuff like that, but people have a general attitude, I think, that government and taxes kind of run together. People are against taxes, but they want benefits. And you can't have benefits, entitlement benefits, without taxes." Also, of course, the tobacco industry. One Democrat said, "You know, tobacco lobbyists were meeting with different legislators. Their main points were keeping people employed. Business people understood that, and they didn't want people to be out of jobs. People can go to another state that has lax and very lenient tobacco laws, and they would purchase their cigarettes from other places. So they were saying that we were taking money from the state and giving it to other states." Some of the stakeholders in support. Obviously, our health advocacy groups. One Democrat said, "It's the research that the health departments and the alliance and medical groups have brought forward that shows the health risk and the cost associated with smoking that most influences my opinion." The groups receiving taxes was another thing that came up. So one Republican said, "The majority of the state budget in their state goes to the kindergarten through 12th grade education. So your education community was in favor of increased cigarette taxes. I thought the education community was a primary driver." Business owners came up in a lot of different interviews, and the kind of findings were mixed, or the beliefs were mixed, either that they were supportive or indifferent. And one Democrat said, "Most of the constituents didn't care one way or the other. I had a few business owners who had convenience stores or who ran liquor stores. They had a little bit of a problem with it, but it wasn't anything major. It didn't cause me to not get reelected again." Or in opposition. And one Democrat said, "I live close enough that I can drive," he was kind of quoting potential constituents, "I live close enough I can drive 5 more minutes across the line and get my smokes cheaper. And when they get their smokes cheaper, they might fill up gas there. And it would be a big loss of total revenue locally across state lines." So that one of the pushbacks that we dealt with among legislators listening to those concerns really had an impact. And then we also asked about taxation on alternative tobacco products. And as you might guess, a lot of the people that we had interviewed were former state legislators, so some of these issues had just appeared on the horizon when they were in office. And so they just really didn't have a good grasp. And I tend to believe that even our current legislators might not have a great grasp of it either. So I'll tell you what they said, which really was, "I don't know." So alternative tobacco product taxation. In terms of support, one Democrat said, "If they're going to tax ready-rolled cigarettes and packaged cigarettes, they ought to tax other tobacco products as well. Tobacco is still, in my opinion, until it is otherwise proven, the creator of a lot of carcinogens that people are becoming affected by and dying from." So a lot of people just said, if it's tobacco and we're going to tax it, we tax all tobacco products. And then in opposition, "I think other tobacco products are taxed way too much." And these were basically the same sentiments across the board. If you thought that, you know, cigarettes shouldn't be taxed or that the taxes should be low, you felt the same way about alternative tobacco products. The one place where this got a little bit sticky were in the rare instances where people were familiar with electronic cigarettes. And then there was a lot more of uncertainty regarding whether those should be taxed or not and their function in terms of overall impact of tobacco use. And one Democrat said, I think that other tobacco products should be taxed. And, you know, I don't know about e-cigarettes. It's kind of in the news right now, but I don't see that they've been thoroughly tested. I don't know what's in them, but it seems to me that I might have to read that the jury was out in terms of whether or not this was going to keep people from smoking or not. And attempts at passing legislation, there were a lot of kind of themes that came up about whether or not their efforts had been successful and what factors played a role. So political leveraging came up. A Democrat said, I ran a different bill and I didn't have the governor's blessing. I didn't realize that, but I went through all the loops and the hoops, and my bill was having some trouble in the House and getting out of committee. I got it out of the committee, but it was going to have trouble on the floor of the House, and so I was called because they needed my vote to pass a tax increase for tobacco. And so I said, well, if you want my vote, they said, well, if you go along with that, then the governor needs your vote so that you can get some things that you want done. So a lot of this, here's my priority, what's your priority? Okay, what can I win, what can I not win? How much do you need what I have? And so a lot of that political leveraging really messes up people's agenda. Compromise, the Democrat said, as a matter of fact, we tried to raise the taxes when I was in the Senate on buying cigarettes, and we didn't get what we wanted, but I think we did get a little bit. So that's one of the things that's also been frustrating, I think, to a lot of the southeastern states, is that they'll want a dollar tax increase, and they'll give them 50 cents. Well, we know that that doesn't have the impact of a dollar, but it gets you out of their hair for another 5 to 10 years. So it's a double-edged sword. Political party interests. The proposed 10% tax increase died. Ironically, when it came up, the House became Republican. They had a major majority. They had 64%, and so they killed the tax. It would have passed had it remained Democrat. And then lack of leadership or support. I think that's one of the things that comes up an awful lot, is having a champion to usher through your legislation. And one Democrat said, there's a bill every session, but in most cases, those in the leadership position haven't run the bill, because what they do is serve the members. And if they don't have enough members that say that they're going to support an increase, then pretty much they don't run the bill. Appropriate motives for cigarette taxation. Again, this comes up in terms of, what are we really trying to do? Is it generating revenue, or is it manipulating behavior? And that came up in multiple interviews. One Democrat said passing a tobacco tax was a pressing tobacco issue, but actually that tax was passed more to raise revenue for the state than it was to, in my mind, than it was to prevent people from smoking or discourage people from smoking. And then defining how taxes will be spent. That was a huge theme that came out across the different domains, was coming up with defined and appropriate ways to leverage those cigarette taxes. One Democrat said, I'd want to know, number one, what position our state was in financially, number two, what the money would go for. I would say I wouldn't give you an unequivocal no, but I would tell you I'd be reluctant to raise taxes on it. So in terms of conclusions, there are huge misconceptions and gaps in knowledge related to tobacco taxes among former state legislators in the southeastern U.S. For example, them having the disbelief that it would actually have an impact on tobacco use. We know that the research is there. It is an evidence-based strategy for a reason. So we must address these gaps, so that disbelief, and then the misconceptions that their constituents oppose tobacco tax increases, concerns about the economic implications. The research is also pretty robust in refuting some of those concerns that they had. We need to support policymakers in conceptualizing the function and purpose of tax revenues, framing how to be allocated, and understanding issues at play during any session to negotiate legislation. We need to urge constituents to engage with their policymakers to promote such policy and accountability. Across both of our quantitative studies with constituents, we were able to identify that there was not particular opposition to tobacco taxes, and in fact some support. And so we really need to be able to get our constituents to engage with their policymakers. Some obvious limitations to the study: we had 26 former state legislators, mostly Caucasian males. Being able to determine, you know, how the people who we couldn't reach or get to agree to be interviewed compared to this group is impossible. Also, we didn't interview current legislators, which might have had greater information regarding emerging policy issues related to alternative tobacco product taxation. We didn't collect data that would allow for comparison in other regions. We may not have yielded exhaustive information regarding the constructs and processes that were investigated. In terms of implications for research, future research might target current state legislators and sample along the spectrum of progressive to laggard states. Interviewing current legislators may provide updates regarding state-level activity regarding other non-cigarette tobacco product taxes. And in terms of practice, health advocacy groups must develop strategies and materials to address these misconceptions and gaps in knowledge. Advocacy strategies and communication efforts should be targeted based on geographic region, history of tobacco control, and party affiliation. And in terms of kind of this relativity to your region, case studies of how southeastern states were impacted by increased taxes, economically, constituent action reactions, and other types of concerns should also be documented. And then we really do need to help promote engagement of our constituents in the legislative process. So that's it. And as we don't have a moderator, I would be happy to moderate this portion, I guess, since I'm at the mic, unless people are sick of my voice already. Any concerns for Dr. Garcia or Uni? Anybody? Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I noticed between the two studies, on the second study, you seem to define Southeast as a little bit of a wider net, including Virginia, Louisiana, Arkansas.
So that's right. Yeah, so that was really because of the kind of difficulties we had with recruitment, but we also figured that those states would have a similar set of circumstances legislatively, and so that's why we broadened that net. So in terms of feasibility, but also because we figured that that would be an appropriate expansion.
Yes.
2013? So we conducted the survey in the summer, and then the interviews were conducted kind of throughout the year.
I noticed the average tax went up to $1.54
and $1.50. Okay. Sorry about that. All right. Well, thank you all for coming. We appreciate your participation.